Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, Mitchell has asked for it, and we have it.
Yes.
Today, we're going to share a before story. Matt Wilson is sharing his story as he starts his Couch to Marathon journey. And then I'm going to share my thoughts on how one little decision can or act can change the course of history. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
How's your week been, Dean?
Been a good week.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're having fun.
So, it's happening this weekend.
Yes.
One of my kids is getting married, stayed in his new place for his first time last night.
Nice.
My youngest son stayed with him. So, it was kind of weird around here last night. Not weird, but, you know, it was like, I don't even think I said it to Holly, but I was thinking, this is what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
You know, it's exciting, a little sad, but yeah, I don't know. How did you deal with it the first time your kids were kind of away?
Well, you know, my situation's different
because
I was divorced.
True. That's true.
Divorced at that time. So it wasn't a sudden just boom, you know. So it was a little bit different. But the idea of my kids being married having that responsibility and the thought of that it's a different thing to get used to.
For sure. I mean, it's a good thing. I mean, that's what you hope for. That's what we pray for.
Yes.
But then when it happens, you're like, oh, that's different.
Yeah.
Of course, there's more room in the budget now. Because Lane eats like a horse. So, you know, there's that.
That's
insurance, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Lane and Christian are getting married this weekend. So
that's awesome.
Well, yeah, just proud of both of them.
I pray that they
incredibly young people. So I'm proud of them.
And good ones too.
Yeah.
Good ones too. Their hearts are on Jesus. So that's good. Hey, do you know that today? As of today, we finished this recording today, and it is 5 consecutive years without us missing a single week of this podcast.
So why didn't you have confetti or something? Like, we should have done something.
I thought you were the planner.
I mean,
I thought you would have that.
Well, I didn't know it. Somebody didn't plan to tell me about it. Or I would have.
But it is. Congratulations to both of us, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
We do this week in and week out. Some weeks we wonder, is anybody even listening to this? And then some weeks we're like, oh, yeah, we get feedback.
Yeah.
Because really that's the test, is what kind of feedback are you getting? And,
yeah.
And you hear stories. You kind of talk about it down in your Dean's thoughts. We've had those moments with this podcast. People say, hey, you remember back when y'all talked about this? It triggered this. And
Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes it worth it.
It is good.
You know,
it is good stuff.
And, you know, we, you know, one day we'll give Rogan and some of those guys a run for their money.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But we're happy and content right where we're at.
Amen. Our post of the week comes from Will Beverlin. He said, been going nonstop today since early this morning. Got up to get this really tough workout in before having to accompany Anne Marie to her appointment. I know it was on a treadmill, 24 degrees this morning, but it certainly wasn't easy. 10-minute warm-up and cool-down with 3 6-minute pushes at 160 beats per minute heart rate. I was able to maintain a 631 per mile pace for the first 2 intervals, but on the third, my heart rate spiked, so I had to slow down to a 730 pace for the final 2 of the 6 minutes. Definitely feeling it in my hammies right now. Gotta get stronger.
Will's moving on.
Yeah, he is.
But you know, it's funny how when you read out loud, but on my third, my heart rate spiked. It's almost like as a runner, you know exactly what that feeling is.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's like,
I can feel it.
It's that quick.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm done. So it's funny to hear you read it out loud and to almost feel that internally.
For sure, for sure. But I like the way that he's, I mean, this is no excuses. 24 yeah. degrees outside. I don't really want to go run outside, but I'll get it done. I'll get
yeah,
it done.
Yeah, and he made it out to be like the treadmill was somehow supposed to be easier. That's usually the opposite.
Yeah.
Especially for speed work like that, I would much rather do it outside.
Yep, yep. It is for me. So yeah, don't make excuses. Yeah. Figure out a way to get it done.
Kudos to him.
Yeah. It looks like, man, oh man, 6:31 pace is fast.
Yeah,
I mean,
on a treadmill too.
That is moving.
I hope he don't have that thing up against a wall.
Yeah,
you know, well, your back's to the wall. Have you seen those videos?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, if you don't know what we're talking about, if you're buying a treadmill and you don't have a treadmill, never put the treadmill with your back to the wall, because if you fall, you're not getting off that treadmill.
Yep,
it's going to hold you on and just flip you over and over and over.
Yep, so, yep. That's right. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
Those are funny videos.
Well, our run of the week comes from Mary Priello, the Countdown Mary. And really, this was a video. It really wasn't much in the commentary, but I want to talk about the video. She said, come along for 6 minutes of my five-hour run at the 2025 Tokyo Marathon. Mm-hmm. So Countdown Mary was representing us in Tokyo.
Yeah.
That's pretty special, isn't it? I love that. And just from the video, it didn't look like Tokyo itself.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look any different than any major city.
I haven't seen the video
here.
Yet.
Yeah, it was
I saw our pictures earlier in the week, and I think we posted some of those, but I haven't seen the video you're talking about yet.
Yeah.
I'll have to pull that up.
Yeah, I liked it. It was fun. And, you know, she's just every mile, she started the video up, and for 10 seconds, she just said, here we are, mile 16. Yeah. Got to go.
Mary's infectious like that.
She is. It looked like she had a good time with it. There was 1 mile where she shared somebody else that she had met along the way that mm-hmm. was from the United States. But the funniest part came right at the end. So right at the end, she comes up, and I hate to spoil it for you, but...
Well, I think Holly told me about this part.
Okay.
Yeah. Holly has watched the video. I haven't.
After she's finished, you notice she's still got 30 seconds or so left on the video, and you're wondering, wonder what's coming, because she's done. And it shows her at the stairs at a subway station. And I mean, they're long, high stairs. And she's looking at that and going like, really? This is what I got to do? These people are masochists here in Tokyo. But it was, you talk about how reading through that other comment,
mm-hmm.
kind of you could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, looking at those stairs, knowing what she had done, I could feel it.
Well, the only thing that would make that worse is if she was going down the stairs.
That's true.
That would make it even worse.
That is true, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, our trivia question from last week was this. What is the more popular name of patellofemoral syndrome? And, of course, I'm sure a lot of people knew this one quickly. It's called runner's knee. And when you look at the word patella, the patella is your kneecap. The femur is the long bone, the longest bone in your body, actually, mm-hmm. that's just above your kneecap. And so it just makes sense. When you look at it that way. And it's very similar to jumper's knee. So I'd never really looked into this real closely because I thought they were the same thing.
Hmm.
But they're not exactly the same thing. They're very, very similar, though, and they feel identical.
Mm-hmm.
So patellofemoral syndrome is, it can be a number of things, but basically it's that area of your knee is just not working right. But actually, jumper's knee is actually patellar tendinopathy, which is tendonitis, which means there's swelling in your tendon. And with runner's knee, there might or might not be.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a little bit different. The causes of runner's knee, typically caused by at least one or combination of these factors: overuse and repetitive stress on the knee joint, abnormal patellar tracking, or in other words, movement of the kneecap and how it moves, weakness in your thigh and or hip muscles, inadequate flexibility, alignment issues between the hip, knee, and foot, and training errors or poor footwear or running surface abnormalities. So those are the things that tend to cause runner's knee.
So let me point something out that I saw as you were reading through those. So we talk about the terrible twos.
Yeah.
And that's the chief cause of runner's knee. But think about why we say that. So overuse and repetitive stress, obviously that's too soon, too much too soon, too mm-hmm. fast. Abnormal patellar tracking. That one's kind of out of what I'm saying, but weakness in the thigh and hip muscles. Well, when you go slow, you slowly build those muscles. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason. Inadequate flexibility. If you're doing things the way you're supposed to, you should be getting more flexible as you go along. Alignment issues, that's the other one out. But six, training errors, poor footwear. Those are also the things that when you go slow, you'll start to feel it. You'll start to get educated through a program like this. So when you do things the right way, you eliminate four of the six items here.
Yep.
Just by doing it, just take it slow. Don't try to do too much too fast too soon. The terrible twos.
Absolutely. Good point. The symptoms, you have this dull, when you have runner's knee, you know you have runner's knee. Because that little, if you'll reach down and touch your kneecap and feel underneath your kneecap, there's a little bit of space under your kneecap between your kneecap and the bone. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a soft space. That's where it hurts. And you'll have this dull, aching pain around or behind the kneecap. It can be in other areas, but that's usually where it's the most painful. You'll have pain during and after activity. You'll have discomfort when walking, climbing stairs, squatting, or sitting for extended periods. The main one is climbing stairs. Mm-hmm. When you climb stairs with runner's knee, it hurts.
You're putting leverage out on that extremity.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Grinding or popping sensation in the knee or mild swelling.
So the not the cool thing, because it's not cool, but the interesting thing is I've mentioned that I've been dealing with tennis elbow.
Yeah.
And it's not from tennis because I don't play tennis. I think it's got to do some with golf, but I think I remember when I did it, I was actually spreading mulch.
Yeah.
And my two boys and I kind of got in a race spreading mulch. So I was doing very too much too fast too soon. But it's I've never had runner's knee. Huh. And all my ailments and injuries through the years, I've never had runner's knee. But it seems to be that if you've had tennis elbow, it's the same exact thing. Because you talked about going upstairs. Mm-hmm. The most painful thing about what I do with tennis elbow is this right here.
Yeah,
just picking this coffee up out here. Same thing as climbing stairs, you know. Yep. And so for that reason, I feel like I can relate to it more, but I've still never had it.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's the number one injury
for
runners.
That's interesting.
And I've never had it. I've had a lot of others.
Congratulations on avoiding it.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for that stress fracture one day.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'm amazed at the people who don't know this, and when you see it, you're like, really? There's a thing called a runner's knee strap. Mm-hmm. And it just fits in that little soft spot underneath your knee. You have to put it on really tight around your leg for it to work. There's other ways to do it, too. If you go to a trainer can use some what they call pre-wrap, and they can make that do the same thing. But what it does is it kind of holds your kneecap in place. And in some cases, I've had runner's knee where it just, oh, my goodness, it hurt just to walk. But I could put that strap on there, mm-hmm. and the pain completely go away. And so it's a great way to at least get through that pain. Anti-inflammatories is also a good thing to take. Strength, you know, you want to strengthen and stretch. Make sure you don't do one without the other. Mm-hmm. If you go through and you try to strengthen your quad muscles, for example, a lot of times it's weak quad muscles. If you strengthen those and you don't keep it flexible, you're going to make the problem even worse.
Yeah.
So you have to strengthen and stretch those muscles and tendons around the knee. And then back off of your training a little bit. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you can get through this without having to just completely stop.
Sure.
I was reading something online yesterday, and it's amazing how many people, there's a lot of people out there that think as soon as you have any pain, stop. Don't run. Yeah. And then I would read, there were some other people saying, a lot of times the best way to get through something like that is to run through it, to strengthen it. And so you just got to know when and where. But one thing I know about runner's knee, it's no picnic.
Yeah.
And it hurts.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back, and I still need to hear your story. If you're out there listening to this and you have never sent us a story, what are you waiting for? You have a story. We all have a story. And so send it in. Sure. Some of the stories we have are these unbelievable, crazy things that happen, and some of them are very, almost ordinary, but they apply to so many people. So submit your story. You know, I'm doing something right now that is anti what I preach and have been preaching for years. So we have said for years,
here, Dean.
I know, right? So, but I'm experimenting because I love to experiment on myself.
We've done a lot of that in this ministry.
Absolutely.
If you really think about it.
Yeah, we have. So even in all of our training plans and everything, we tell you never do back-to-back hard days. Don't do hard workouts on back-to-back days because that's bad for you. You need to sure. give your body time to rest. Well, what I have found as I get older is that I don't get sore the next day. Mm-hmm. So the next day I feel fine. So what I did this week was I did back-to-back hard days, but I didn't do it's almost like I did about three quarters of a workout both days instead of doing really hard efforts both days. And it worked out pretty good. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with my recovery and other things. I got to work on that, make sure that works out good. But right now, it may be, you know, a lot of people do two a days. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of professionals, well, almost all professionals run twice a day. And a lot of times they do the end thing right now is double threshold training.
Sure.
Where they'll do a threshold workout in the morning and then they'll do another one in the afternoon. Well, I'm really doing that same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm stretching that time out just a little bit more, but it's really kind of the same thing. Because as you get older,
So how are you feeling on the third day?
I feel fine. I feel tired. My legs feel really weak and kind of rubbery and tired, but they feel okay.
Yeah.
Nothing hurts. They actually feel strong other than it's a kind of a weird feeling. You feel kind of strong, but kind of weak at the same time. Mm-hmm. You've probably felt that before. Anyway, I'll keep you up to date. I'll let you know
how
that goes.
Now, we will say this is more of an advanced technique. I mean,
yes.
Really, anybody in any of our beginner plans,
you should not
stick to the skipping a day between efforts.
Well, I say everybody should stick to the skipping a day between until I do some more experimentation.
Yeah. But I mean, it is like to your point, you hear double threshold, all these things. And I think the problem is so many people go on these forums and they take a prescription that somebody who's running 80, 100 miles a week and has 150,000 miles on their leg, and they try to prescribe it to themselves, being a brand new runner. And it's always a recipe for disaster.
That's right. Well, you know, there's a bunch of these places on the internet where you can go and people talk about different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them can be interesting. Some of them can be terrible. So I found this place where people were sharing their most embarrassing thing they ever did while they were running. And I thought, what is the most embarrassing thing I've ever done while running? Well, about half of these responses had to do with the bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing that pops in your mind.
Isn't it? Isn't it funny how that it works that way? So I bring that up for this reason. If you have problems with bathroom issues and gut issues while you're out running, you are not in the minority.
No.
You are in the overwhelming majority.
But it's something we don't really talk about much. So right. For those people who do experience it for the first time, they're like, oh, I need to quit running because of this.
Yeah. No.
Figure it out. Yeah.
Yep. We all have that embarrassing story about what we did or didn't do.
You learn to pay attention to your nutrition more.
You do.
A lot of times.
You do.
Some things work and some things don't.
Yep. I read more than one post about people coming home with only one sock. So Anyway, and then there was another disgusting topic. There were several people talking about throwing up during or after running.
Let me pause you for a second.
Yeah.
Because this hit me. I had one of those issues. It's been a couple years ago now, maybe. No, it's been about a year ago. Where I was running, I had to dive off into the woods. Won't go any further than that. But what I know nowadays that you have to be careful of, especially if it's like a trail or an old farm road or something that you go down, you have to watch for trail cameras nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody has trail cameras. There are cameras everywhere, even in the most dense places in the woods, because they're game cameras, right? They're looking for deer and turkey and all this stuff. So be careful.
Yeah.
That if it looks like it's a worn path, or even if it's a game trail, chances are there's eyes on that. Now that didn't happen to me, but I could see some farmer pulling up his trail camera and just getting a full moon on his camera, you know. So
I wonder if I've ever been caught on one, because, boy,
you would be amazed at how many cameras there are. I had to. I'm sure. You remember the story where I had to run the cows back to a farmer's house a year or so ago, and we passed 3 or 4 cameras going through the woods just in a mile stretch here.
Yeah.
There's cameras everywhere in the woods now. So be careful about that.
I could see that. Yeah. Well, and then probably the next most popular issue that people were embarrassed about were times where they tripped and fell, or they ran into somebody or something. I like this one. It says, doing a threshold run on a trail near my house, checking my heart rate on my watch at what was apparently the same time another runner was doing the same thing, coming the opposite direction, full speed, ran into each other on an 8-foot wide trail in broad daylight. I can picture that. I can see that, where I've done that before, where I'm kind of looking down at something and I look up and all of a sudden, boom, there's something there. So there's a bunch. There's one here where somebody had geese that started chasing them, which I've had.
Yeah.
The geese will do that.
Yeah.
And when they turned to run, they ran into some rocks and wound up bruising their face, and they're all bloody. And
so let's get transparent here. What's your most embarrassing running story?
Probably the time when I was in Hawaii and I was doing a tempo run, so I was running pretty fast, and I was really, it was an intersection. It was a fairly busy intersection.
Yeah.
And at that intersection, I caught my foot on a crack in the road there, and I went down really, really hard. I mean, all these people just had to look at me, and that had to be hilarious to the people that were watching. So that's mine, I think. You? Yeah.
Both of mine are kind of the same thing, and both of them were running with Lane, and both of them were falls, but I tripped and fell on Walnut Avenue coming down the hill. We were going counterclockwise, so we were coming down the hill on Walnut. And it was early one Saturday morning. Actually, it was most of the triathlon kids. This was before you came along.
Yeah.
And we're all running down that hill, and I caught one of those curbs or something. And it was one of those falls where it's 100 feet before you hit the ground.
Yeah.
And Walnut Avenue was bumper to bumper.
Of course.
And all those kids look back like, Coach, come on. I mean, they didn't even turn around and say, are you okay? They just kept cruising. So it's one of those things you jump up and you say, I don't think nobody saw that. There's 10,000 cars right here around me, but I don't think nobody saw that.
That's good stuff. Well, probably the worst one that I read, the one that I felt most sorry for the person. I mean, there's a bunch of them where people got injured and other things, and I feel really bad for those people. But this one was worse, because this is what he wrote. Currently dealing with poison ivy on my whole undercarriage, is the way he put it. I can picture somebody having an emergency situation, stopping in the woods, and I would say that watching for poison ivy is even more important than trail cams.
So. Leaves of three, let it be. Remember that.
Well, that's fun.
Ow, I can't even, I've not heard that. I've never heard of somebody doing that.
I haven't either, but oh my goodness.
That's starting to sink in right now.
Oh,
because I am highly allergic to poison ivy.
Yeah. Oh, whew. I just can't imagine. Oh, that's a terrible thought. Terrible thought.
That's embarrassing that goes on for days.
Yes, that's right. All right. Well, you've asked for someone to share their story before embarking on the Couch to Marathon journey. Now, this one is not really a Couch to Marathon journey because he's already run
but
a half marathon.
But it's a step in the right direction. So, Matt, thank you for this.
Yes, yes. So, this one...
We still want the person who's on the couch.
That's right.
We still want that one. But this is... This will be in between.
That's right.
We'll get Matt, and remember, Matt, you have to write us back once you're done with your marathon.
That's right.
Of course, he's going to be in Gulf Shores, it sounds like, so we'll get to talk to him.
Yeah. So Matt Wilson, he writes a story called So Close. Run for God became a part of my life in 2020. The Run for God team mailed me a window sticker set, 5K, 10K, 13.1, and 26.2, for answering a question correctly on the podcast. The thought was to display a sticker for each completed distance. There are stickers displayed in our garage for all but the 26.2-mile distance. So close. I'm writing this today with the intention to display the 26.2-mile sticker in January 2026 after the Big Beach Marathon. In Northern Ohio, there are races for each of the 5K, 10K, and half distances, all within an hour of me on the actual dates of the races in the Couch to Marathon plan. This will truly be a Couch to Marathon accomplishment due to an extended break from running and walking. My story is one of salvation and second chances. Life to the full began for me December 2010 after encountering Jesus during a struggle. God made beauty from the ashes by providing five children, including twin seven-year-old daughters. My Couch to Marathon challenge needs to be achieved more for the kids' long-term well-being than mine. My daughter Elise's middle name is my mother-in-law's maiden name, Bruner, spelled B-R-U-N-N-E-R. She is our daughter with a few disabilities. I tell her that she is going to live out her middle name, B Runner. You are going to be our runner, Elise. God has been so faithful and good to us. In the heartache and valleys, He has met us fully with His presence and assurance. This next year will be another example of relying fully on God. Because on my own, I am nothing. But with God, that 26.2 sticker will find its home displayed on the garage cabinet windows. This program design fits people like me who have given their life to Christ and want to bring Him glory by what He can do through us. That is my plan, to look back on this story in 2026 to say that I remember when the Couch to Marathon started. That day when the half marathon was completed in 2020 took me by surprise, although it should not have been a surprise because I followed the Couch to Marathon plan closely. I can't wait to share successes and encourage one another over the next 12 months. Thank you to the Upward Running community for providing this program.
So cool statistics. A cool thing to point out, Matt, is when he gave his life to Christ was the year that Run for God started.
That's right.
And then it appears that when he found Run for God, now Upward Running, it was probably about the time of that very first podcast, because he talks about he did the Couch to Marathon, found it in 2020, which we started the podcast January, was it January or February 2020?
February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That is.
Connecting those dots.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Sounds like he's got his work cut out for him. He's got five children. I mean, that's talk about a handful.
But what an example to set. I mean, that's he makes a good point that he's discounting what it's going to do for him. It's going to do just as much for him.
Sure
but
it is.
The thing it does for your family and those watching you, he makes a good point that it has a tremendous impact on those around you. You're setting the example, and yep, that's what we're to do as parents, right?
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
I think back to my own life, and I remember, you know, one of the things that I like to do, I'm a do-it-yourselfer. Well,
We all know that, Dan, from your lawnmower stories.
Yeah. But why am I a do-it-yourselfer? Because I watched my father be a do-it-yourselfer, and I realized that I could do a lot of stuff that a lot of people aren't willing to try to do. Mm-hmm. And that was before I started all that before
YouTube. The internets.
That's right. but yeah, because he provided that example, I was able to follow through and do some things. And I enjoy doing that stuff. And hopefully his kids will watch him do something hard and recognize the value in that.
Sure.
Ephesians 6:10 says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might." This is the beginning of the armor of God section of Scripture. And he says, God gives us the armor. And it strikes me that what Matt is going to attempt is he's going to try to run a marathon. And running a marathon, going through this program, it requires action. And when you read these passages of Scripture, it doesn't just talk about the armor doesn't just fall on you. It doesn't just appear on you. You have to, it requires action to put the armor on, to do the things you have to do. It requires action. And then at the end, it says, so we can reduce the devil, or resist the devil, reduce the devil. Yeah, we want to reduce him too. But the whole point is that it requires action. And that's what the training plan does. That's what running does. And that's, we have to go, in order for us to have a good defense, which is what the armor is, we have to go on offense.
Sure.
And they complement each other. We have to go on offense to have a good defense, and then we have to have a good defense in order to have a good offense. And they roll with each other. So what are those defenses we have to have? From a running standpoint, well, we need to eat right. We need to warm up and cool down properly. We need to stretch. We need to do some strength training. All of those things are defensive things that make us stronger when it's time to run that marathon and go on offense. What do you think?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this because I didn't think this through. It's just now hitting me in the moment. You're right. But why does God give us armor? Why does Jesus say, pick up your cross daily and follow me? Why did he give us that picture? Why did Paul talk about, I rejoice in my affliction? What do all of those things tell us that society says shouldn't be? And it's that our walk with Christ, just like Matt's next 12 months of doing this Couch to Marathon, is hard. But we, as much as Scripture talks about this is going to be hard, we've talked about this so many times on here.
Yeah.
We have this illusion in our head, and it's not from the Bible. It's not from Jesus. It's not from Paul. It's not from Ephesians 6:10. We have this illusion that things are supposed to be easier when we give our life to Christ. And it's just not true. And it's just like, you know, you hear all these hacks out there nowadays, how to run a marathon in 2:45 on 3 miles of running a week. It's, if you start to see things in your social media feed, or you're hearing it from friends, or even worse, you're hearing it from the pulpit, that there's ways to make this walk with Christ easy, beware.
Absolutely.
Just like when you hear of a training plan on 3 miles a week to run a 2:45 marathon, we're aware of that. Everybody knows that you can't do that. But it's just as clear from Scripture that that's not the case in our walk with Christ. It's worth it. Just like when there is nothing like crossing the finish line of a marathon, especially your first marathon. Yeah. There's nothing like it. In the same way, and it's why Paul describes this finish line of heaven. I fought the good fight. I have finished the race. It's such a close picture.
Yeah.
That first marathon. But looking back at what we did to get there is pain, is trials, is setbacks, it's failure. It's up and down, up and down, up and down. But the point is we made it and it's worth it. And I don't know, it's just not lost on me. Every time I read these verses, if it was easy, we wouldn't need the armor of God.
That's right.
Armor represents a battle, right?
That's right.
And that's what we do every day in this life is we battle for the cause of Christ, not not do easy things. Amen. Do hard things.
Amen. John 10:10 says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." And he follows that up with, "Jesus gives life." I like this scripture because I feel like this is what we're trying to do as a program. We're trying to give people the tools to live life more to the full with more abundance. When we do hard things like you're just talking about, it's just more life. It's a more abundant life to be able to do those things. And it seems like, you know, our all of our senses are heightened when we do hard things. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And in this case, Jesus is saying that, you know, there are those people out there who are going to try to steer you in the wrong direction, just like you're just talking about. And that if you'll follow Jesus and follow his example, which included going to the cross, then he's going to steer you in the right direction. So just follow him.
And the thing you have to be, I hate to stay on this soapbox, but the thing you have to be careful of is, you notice it says the thief is progressive to steal, to kill, and then destroy everything about you. The place you have to be most aware and most on guard is when you do make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thief, the evil one, the devil, he wants to take that mistake and he wants to exploit it and make you think that you're a failure. You can do nothing right. You just need to give up. In the same way, it's exactly what happens when somebody misses a workout, right?
That's right.
Especially beginners. Even you probably don't deal with this as much as a beginner, but we all deal with it. Well, I messed up. I just need to throw in the towel.
Yep.
That's where we have to be the most on guard in our walk with Christ and in fitness, because that is the tipping point for most people is that moment where they mess up.
Mm-hmm.
God tells us we're going to mess up.
Yep.
He commands us not to, but he knows we are going to. That's why grace and forgiveness and everything is there, because we're going to. But I know that's where I struggle the most. Yep. I do something and I'm like, "Well, why did you just do that?" And for a second, it's like you need to throw in the towel. But that's why you got to stay close to God. He's there. I mean, he's there just ready to whack, you know. Don't think that way.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of people struggle in their walk and in their run.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, that's a good one. John 14:6 says, "I am the way and the truth and the life." Jesus gives the answers we all need, he follows with. What big words those are. Mm-hmm. The way. The truth, the life. I mean,
it's kind of counter that previous verse.
Yeah.
It's the counter to the progression of the devil.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the opposite. It's
good point. The one that strikes me is the word truth, because again, we've talked about this before, but that word has been co-opted by people who don't understand what that word means. Mm-hmm. The word truth, there is a truth. And you'll find it in the pages of the Bible. You'll find the truth there. And that should be our standard for everything that we do. But if you think that, let me say this, it's good that we all have different experiences. It's good that we look at things differently. It's good that we all have different opinions. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But there is only one truth. Right. There is only one fact. And I think that's so important, because Jesus being the truth means that every part of our life we need to look at through the lens of truth. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's so important. And I don't know. I was thinking about this with Debbie, and I've been watching a show, you know, it's got lawyers and stuff like that. And sometimes they're in the courtroom, and I thought, what is the jury looking for? Mm-hmm. Well, they have a standard, which is called the law. Mm-hmm. And they're comparing all these things they're hearing to whether or not people complied with that thing, that law. And they're looking for the absolute truth, not for well, maybe it's okay for this person, not that person. No, there's a law. Mm-hmm. You broke the law or you didn't break the law, and that's what they're looking for. And that's what we need to do with Jesus. Mm-hmm. He is truth, and we need to look at that as a black and white issue.
You took the words out of my mouth. It's black and white.
Yeah.
There, with Christ, there is no gray. But, man, that is where we like to operate, right?
Yeah, it is.
And the same thing in our workout. You know, how many times have you looked at your workout schedule and you got this on the books for the day, and I know I've done this a lot. You get to the track and it still says what it said this morning. Yeah. But all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, it says 8 by 800. Maybe 4 will be okay, right?
Sure.
That's that gray area. It's to be successful in that training plan, you've got to look at it as black and white.
Yep.
Chaos ensues when you look at it any other way than black and white.
Yep. That's true. Some questions. Can you think of a time that you were so close to achieving something but fell short? I thought of a couple of things here. The first one I thought about was back when I was in high school, the Foot Locker Championships. You know, I was 8 seconds away from going to Foot Locker Nationals, which is, especially back then, was the national championship. And I missed it. Mm-hmm. And it was, and again, it was close. Now, it wasn't close enough that it didn't feel close at the time, I'll put it that way. But afterwards, and you look at it, you go, wow, 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. But then I thought about another time. And I was trying to, I don't know if I've ever told this story on here, but I wrote a letter one time to the person who invites runners to the Peachtree Road Race. And I asked them, I was a master's runner over 40, and I was pretty fast for an over 40 guy. And so I wrote to her and I said, hey, can I be considered for a spot as an invited runner? Because I felt like I stood a chance of winning some prize money if I ran well enough. And I thought, well, then she'd probably do that. And she said, well, no, let me tell you this, because I told her what my fastest time at the time was, like 34-35, I think, is what I had run for a 10K at that time. And she said, you need to have run under 34:10 in order to be considered for one of those slots. And I was like, okay. I mean, I appreciate her honesty and her directness, and I got something to shoot for. Mm-hmm. And she said, now, if you do that, she said, write me back. Let me know. And so I went to a race in Rome, Georgia, mm-hmm. and ran a 10K there. And I remember running that race, and everything went just according to plan. I was right on pace the whole time, but it was going to be close. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming around that last mile, and there was a 6-mile mark. And of course, you know, it's 6.2 miles. At the 6-mile mark, I was right there. Mm-hmm. Well, the last 0.2 is a little bit uphill on that race. And I thought, I've got to really get it to make it. And so I turned on the jets. I went as hard as I could for that last mile, and I'm running. And I look up in the clock. Just before I hit the line, the clock changes to 34:10. And I thought, oh, you have got to be kidding me. I just missed it by 1 second. Mm-hmm. And this idea of being so close was never more real to me than in that moment. I thought, oh my goodness, I can't believe I just missed it. I was that close. I couldn't find 1 second. And of course, I'm bent over. You know how you do at the end of a race. You bend over, you're on your knees, you're breathing hard, and all these thoughts are going through my head. And I look down at my watch. I had stopped my watch at the finish line, and my watch said 34:02. Well, it turned out my official time was 34:01, and the clock was actually wrong. And it didn't even dawn on me. But then I went from this, oh my goodness, I just barely missed it, to I made it just like that.
Yeah.
Just in the blink of an eye. And I remember feeling the contrast was just amazing in the way that I felt. And so I get it when you feel short, but there are ways to overcome.
You know what sticks out to me about that story? I love how we go different directions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm pretty good at math. I think you're pretty good at math. You went to tech. You know, there's algebra, there's calculus, there's trigonometry. The hardest math in the world is math that you're trying to do in the last moments of a race.
That is so true.
Do you remember the time you came up to me in Ironman and I had a goal I was trying to reach and you're running beside me and you're like, I think you're going to make it. Have you done the... And I said, Dean, I can't do math right now.
Yeah. And then I said something like, I think you're going to make it. And I ran away.
And you left and I was like, what does that mean?
And then you picked it up and ran that
last... And I don't reach my goal.
And you ran that last 5 miles faster.
I think probably the one that stuck out to me when I read this question is, I've only ever tried to qualify for Boston once, and that was at Albany, years ago. And I feel like in my training, I was there. My long runs were, I was right on, you know, I don't want to oversell it because it was going to be a hard, I think at the time I had to run 307, 307, is that right? This has been 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think 305 was
305 or 307. Anyway, I feel like I was there in my training. And I got to Albany, which is a flat, fast Boston qualifier. And the wheels just came off. I seems like I ate something. It was stomach issues. There was a tornado, literally. The tornado sirens were going off. The volunteers were gone at the aid stations. But that wasn't why. I just come apart. And so, it wasn't 8 seconds for me. It was, I forget what I ran down there. It was.
But at some point in time, you feel it slipping away, but there's a moment where you realize it's not going to happen. And that always hurts.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly what we were talking about up in the I think the run of the week. It's a moment that it's like, oh.
Yeah.
It's gone. It's almost like you can feel it leaving your body.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
And then there's almost a sense of peace after that. Like.
Yeah, there is.
Okay. This isn't going to happen today. And I've never tried again. I've said on here, I'm going to have to let my age catch up to my Boston qualifier time because I just don't like to hurt that much. I love the suck. I hope that word's okay to say on here. I'm saying it in the form of like rucking.
Yeah.
I love the dull, long, I don't like that acute, intense pain that is required for qualifying times of any distance.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not that guy anymore.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I get less and less interested in it as I go. It makes it harder and harder to. I was doing a track workout this week trying to run fast, like short distances fast. And I just haven't done it in so long. And gosh, it's so hard.
Yeah. I mean, Travis said it the other day we were talking. I think you've heard him say this. He made the comment. He said, ultra marathoners are for the guys who give up on being fast.
Yeah.
I took a little bit of exception when he said it because you know how Travis says it. You know,
it's yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
You're
yeah.
a slow guy now.
Yeah. Yeah. But on the other side.
But I mean, there's some truth to that. I mean, I think the top echelon of the ultra world would take exception with that.
Sure.
But it's just like Lane used to call Ironman the old man sport.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's true.
The longer stuff.
Yeah, so. But he doesn't feel that way anymore.
No, he doesn't.
What does this mean? Prior planning prevents poor performance. You like that one, don't you?
I need that sign to go right beside this sign back here. So it's so funny that this question comes up because you're gonna love what's written on this paper that I wrote last night.
Yeah.
So Lane's getting married this weekend. This is their last, I call it the last single people dinner at our house tonight.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing a prime rib. Well, prime rib is if you're gonna do it right, you better plan. So I've got written out at 10:30 this morning, I need to take that thing out of the refrigerator and let it start getting room temperature. I've got 10:30, 12:30, I put it in the smoker. 4:30, I'm going to turn the heat up to get that sear on it. 5:30, I'm pulling it out and letting it rest. 6 o'clock, we're eating. A prime rib, I've got a whole plan for today.
Yeah.
But that is what ensures the success. That we're not eating shoe leather tonight.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. It's a good point.
Yes, I love that quote. Prior planning prevents poor performance. Yep. The five P's.
Good stuff.
Have you ever heard that quote? Is that a quote that's been out there?
I've heard that somewhere.
Did he just come up with that?
I think I've heard that somewhere. I'm almost positive I have. Yeah, prior planning prevents poor performance.
Well, I need that sign too. Yeah. I'll hang it right here behind
me. Right next to the other one. Yeah. Well, this goes back in the Bible, you know, to we were just recently talking about the planning, about mm-hmm. how important it is for us to plan things in order for things to turn out right. You know, I started a project a couple of months ago. It's a woodworking project. Mm-hmm. And I was really eager to get started on it, but there was some hardware that I needed to order. Mm-hmm. The hardware wasn't going to be here for over a month. I got it actually 2 days ago. So now I can start on it. Now I'm not as excited about it, you know, as I was then. But the point being that I could have went ahead and started on it, but then that hardware might not have fit exactly the way I needed to see it. I needed mm-hmm. to get it in my hands mm-hmm. first before I could really plan what I want to do. And so many times we just start, and what would happen if I would have gone ahead and done what I wanted to do and then found out, oh, those pieces of hardware, well, they're a little bit bigger than I thought, or they are shaped a little bit different than I thought, and I made I caused a problem mm-hmm. rather than created what I wanted to create. And that's how we do. We run into stuff, get started before we really think about it. Mm-hmm. This whole idea behind a training plan, right, is to go into it with your eyes wide open, knowing what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could run a marathon saying, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run 5 days a week. I'm going to run long 1 day a week, and I'm going to run at least 3 miles every time I run. And you could do that. That's a training plan. That's actually a plan.
Yeah.
And it would work. But you're not going to get the full experience of doing the best marathon you can unless you really plan out everything that you're going to do.
But it's that way with everything. It's that way with retirement. I mean, you can say I'm going to do this for the next 30 years, but I call it dreaming in HD. You know, I try to sit down just like, I mean, it's a dumb example, but last night I sat right here at this desk and said, okay, what needs to be true for me to pull a prime rib off the smoker at 127 degrees at 5:30 tomorrow? That demands a series of events. In the same way, I mean, we have people in our club that the 20-minute 5K is a big bucket list. I think of Darren Lewis. I mean, yeah. Darren's done this a few times. Well, Darren doesn't just say, okay, I'm going to run a 1957 5K in 6 months. That's not what Darren does.
Right.
He says for that to be true, all these things in the meantime also have to be true.
Yep.
And that's what ensures good performance. It's what ensures a good walk with Christ. It's what ensures a good retirement. It's what ensures a good prime rib.
Yep.
Planning.
Yep. Now, you do have to, there's the other side of that coin. I have to argue the other side of that coin because you know how I am.
Here we go.
There are times where you can overplan. So, for example, if you're going to build a house, you need to be really, really detailed in your plans. But for me, if I'm just cooking dinner on a regular night, now you got a special night tonight, that's different. You just got a regular night. I don't need to write down all the things I need for dinner tonight when all I want to do is put some food in my body and move on. At that point, it becomes too much.
True. But if you were cooking a regular dinner tonight and it was a $100 chunk of meat,
then it's different.
You're going to put some planning into it.
For sure.
Yeah. The stakes are higher.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean.
The higher the stakes are, the more planning. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. But it's true.
The higher the stakes are, the more planning that's required.
That's right.
And walking into heaven and saying, I fought the good fight, I finished the race, there's no more higher stakes.
That's true.
You need to plan that. You need to be very, very intentional about that. Because if we're not, just like that, the way we're going to run a sub 20-minute 5K with no plan, the chances of you nailing that is slim.
Yep.
And I hate to use the word nailing it in our walk with Christ, but Paul did that. Paul nailed it. He was on his deathbed, and he says, I fought the good fight. I finished the race. There's a crown laid up for me in glory.
Amen.
There was a lot of day-to-day things that Paul was doing that he was looking ahead. And yep. He was planning, okay, I'm gonna be intentional about this tomorrow. He was in jail. He had to be doing that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would be down in the dumps and woe is me all the time, but he wasn't. He was telling the guards, hey, I rejoice in my affliction. Let me tell you about Jesus.
Amen.
You have to be intentional to do that.
That's the way to bring it home. Last question. How do those who love and know you the most describe you to those who don't live under the same roof?
That's a scary question.
Well, Debbie was just telling me about a conversation she had with somebody about me. Yeah. And she said that she told them that I was a good husband, but I'm a little crazy sometimes. So I guess that sums it up for me.
Obsessive, needs routine, planner. Who knows? I'm scared. I'm kind of scared to ask that question. I really am. That's a very thought-provoking question. But it, again, maybe that's a question we all need to ask those around us and demand honesty because, you know.
It's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, what will people say about you at your funeral?
Oof. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That makes you reset how you think about things for sure.
For sure.
Upward Running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness.
All right, we're back. And one of our favorites, I hate to say that, one of our favorites, that doesn't sound reasonable, does it? But, well, anybody who's a Run Club member is one of
my favorites.
One
of these household names.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a name we know.
David Rutledge, he sent me this article from The Guardian. It was a great article. It says, and I'll just read portions of it. The day before Eliud Kipchoge's first attempt at a sub-2-hour marathon in 2017, a Nike vice president described it to me as a moonshot. Now, though, the track and field equivalent of landing on Mars is apparently just 3 minutes and 59.37 seconds away. That was the startling conclusion of a study in the Royal Society Open Science Journal last week, which predicted that a woman could shatter the 4-minute mile barrier with the help of aerodynamics. Not just any woman, but Faith Kipyegon, the Kenyan Olympic 1500-meter champion and the greatest female middle distance runner in history. The study, led by Professor Cram, a physiologist at the University of Colorado Boulder, is a serious piece of work, according to Dr. Michael Joyner, an expert in human performance at the Mayo Clinic. In 1991, Joyner wrote a paper saying that it was physiologically possible to run a marathon in under 2 hours. At that point, the world record was 2 hours and 6 minutes and 50 seconds. Nearly three decades later, Kipchoge proved him right by running 1:59:40 in Vienna in 2019, thanks to a quantum leap in super shoe technology and the help of 40 elite pacemakers who subbed in and out of the run and adopted an arrow formation to help him draft and reduce wind resistance. He was part of Kipchoge's team for that run, which did not count as the official record, and in his last paper, he scrutinizes the race in Monaco where Kipyegon obliterated the women's mile record by almost 5 seconds. As he points out, her time of 4:07.64 was achieved despite poor drafting and for being alone for the last 600 meters. Quote, our calculations suggest that with greatly improved but reasonable aerodynamic drafting, Kipyegon could break the 4-minute barrier. The paper concludes, we find that she could feasibly run 3:59.37 with two teams of female pacers, one 1.2 meters in front and one 1.2 meters in the back, who can change out at 800 meters. What do you think about that?
It kind of makes my brain hurt. Yeah.
I'm skeptical. I'm very skeptical. Because first of all, when Faith Kipyegon ran 4:07, she broke the previous record by 5 seconds, which means that was a really, really outstanding effort in that particular race. And 407 is a world away from 359. Mm-hmm. How many men have we seen that have run 402, 403 dozens of times mm-hmm. in their attempt to break four and never do it? We've seen it over and over again. And I remember probably the best shape I've ever been in. I was probably in 410 to 412 shape at one point. And the idea of running 359, it wasn't even it wasn't even close. Mm-hmm. It was like, that is forever away. Now, could I do it someday in the future? Yeah, I thought about that, but mm-hmm. it wasn't something I could do anywhere close to then. And but I'm hearing that there's a new shoe technology out there that's about to hit the market, and that may bound us another step forward. And with that and the aerodynamics and all the other things, I don't know. What do you think?
I think it'll happen. I think I think the 2-hour marathon's going to fall. I think this can fall. And the reason I think that is because 20 years from now, if we're, Lord willing, still sitting here doing this podcast, man, we'll be old then, that we'll look back and we'll say, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the technology is then. I don't know what the training principles are then. We have no way of knowing that. But one thing I do know is they're both going to advance.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't, this is where you start to have the two trains of thought.
Yeah.
I'm triathlon background. We love advancement technology. Bring it on. Then you have the others. And I really don't know exactly where you fall because you've been back and forth.
Yeah.
But we should embrace it. I mean, because it still doesn't discount the human element of it.
Right.
If I put on the most advanced technology that is going to be there in 20 years, I'm not breaking 2 hours. You still have to be a genetic freak to do this. So we can't discount that. Technology, it's going to happen, so we might as well embrace it. That reason, and training principles. I mean, there are things that we still learn today, just like you were experimenting right now with double threshold stuff.
Yeah.
Who knows what that might yield in 5 years? It might be the gold standard in 5 years. Yeah. And it produced a 2% increase or decrease in people's times across the board. Well, that alone is enough to at least do the 2-hour marathon and probably pretty close. I'm not a math wizard right here, but so I think for those reasons, we'll sit here in 20 years and both of these we'll be looking back saying, I can't even believe we thought about doubting that. But to your point, there is a critical mass at some point, right?
Yeah.
You put technology, it's got to be, I'm trying to think of the right word. It's got to be technology that isn't.
It doesn't do work for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the line.
Yeah. Like I could break the world record for the 1-hour ride on the track, you know, on a bicycle.
With an e-bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that taking that out of it, I still think that in 20 years, we're going to be far beyond where we are now.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right, well, it's time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's the time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, one decision or action can change the course of history, and I wrote this to prove it. It's called Changing the Course of History. There was a revival meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina on Thursday, November 1st, 1934, in which a 16-year-old boy made a decision that would change the world. That day, the teenager heard a man by the name of Mordecai Ham preach about Jesus. Billy Graham would go on to become perhaps the most consequential preacher since the Apostle Paul himself. On Friday, June 12, 1942, a 13-year-old girl received the gift of an autograph book from her parents. That book would go on to become the most famous diary in the history of the world when a teenage girl named Anne Frank began writing in it. You can probably think back to something you did or a gift you received or a decision you made that changed the course of your life. I have often thought back to my choice of college. I attended Georgia Tech. If I had decided to attend Clayton State College, which was the hometown college in my area, my entire life would have been different. I began my professional life 1 month after graduation because I had interviewed on campus with a company in North Georgia. If I had made a different choice about college and I had been attending Clayton State instead of Georgia Tech, much of my life would have been different. That interview would never have taken place. Our lives are full of consequential decisions. The problem is that we don't usually realize how consequential those decisions are until much later. Mordecai Ham probably couldn't recall what he had preached that day when he found out years later that Billy Graham had made a decision that day. But his decision about what to preach that day changed the course of history. When Anne Frank's parents bought her a book to write down her thoughts, no one could have imagined that those words would live on for centuries. And even less famous issues, like my college choice, changed the lives of many people down the road. When we choose to check off the next workout on our schedule or choose different items at the grocery store the next time we shop, it could be that everything continues down the path we're already on, but it could alter what Back to the Future called the time-space continuum. Like, what if I went for a routine run, stopped by my normal watering hole at Red Clay State Park, and met someone there, and that person asked me some questions about running? It could be that that discussion leads to talking about upward running, which leads to what Jesus has done in my life. I could get back on the road, finishing up the last 3 miles of my run without even giving that conversation a second thought. But what if that person on the other end of that discussion picked up her Bible for the first time in 10 years, and that led to a trip to church? And before you know it, she has accepted Jesus as her Lord and Savior and is being baptized. It could happen that way. And I may never know that the decision I made to go for a run that day led to her salvation. It's an interesting thing to ponder, for sure. Now, I can hear a skeptic say, yeah, but you could also say that if you chose not to run and something spectacular happened because you didn't run. That's true. But my experience tells me that most of the time, the good things that happen in our lives come from things we do, not things we choose not to do. I guess what I'm saying is, if we have a bias for action and getting things done, we are more likely to influence things for good. If Mordecai Ham had stayed home that day, he almost certainly would not have accomplished something greater than he did. And think about the greatest examples in the Bible. What would have happened if Noah had decided not to build the ark? Or if Abraham chose to stay where he had been placed? Or Moses didn't lead the Israelites out of Egypt? Sometimes the entire course of history is changed because of one decision to do something. And the most important thing we can do is to understand who Jesus is and accept him as our personal Lord and Savior. Get out and be active. It's your best chance for doing a thing that will have an impact on your life and the lives of others. Anne Frank's parents didn't know what they were doing when they purposefully went out to buy that journal on that fateful day. But millions of people have been inspired by their choice to do something. What are you going to do today?
Man, that's a great story, Dean. Action always trumps inaction.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there are times, I mean, I can hear other people
saying,
yeah,
I mean, you can make dumb choices for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you make dumb choices. But if you're making good, positive choices and you're following God's will, it's always going to lead to good things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've heard people come back to you later and say, hey, do you remember when you told me such and such, or you shared this with me, or you did this for me?
Yeah, I mean, I've had those conversations. The one that sticks out to me the most, and it still sticks out to me today, is a young lady that I used to coach. Was that before you? You know who I'm talking about. I won't say her name, but she's kind of out there right now. I mean, she's a little bit post-college right now and needs Jesus. But I'll never forget when she got into college, she just sent me a text out of the blue one day and said that she really appreciates, I forget how she put it, basically how hard we were on our athletes. I mean, we were not easy. Because life's hard, right?
That's right.
And so we didn't operate in the gray. You're either hitting your times or you're not hitting your times, and we always tried to parallel that into our lives. And she sent me a text when she was at the University of Georgia, and just out of nowhere one day and said, I really appreciate the lessons that I learned through that, because it's coming in handy now, because, you know, there's a lot of gray area when you go to college. And I've thought about this a lot. I actually did a God's Thought video years ago about Mordecai Ham. I think I phrased it, who is the greatest evangelist of all times? And everybody automatically says Billy Graham.
Yeah.
And I challenged it by saying, well, what about Mordecai Ham?
Yeah.
Because without him, there would be no Billy Graham.
That's right. And
so, yeah, you can go down a wormhole with this, but it's a good exercise to do from time to time.
It is.
What we do or what we don't do,
yeah,
has consequences.
Yeah. Have you ever looked into Mordecai Ham? And there was a little bit of controversy that surrounded him.
I did back then.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a hellfire brimstone. I would call him a Chatsworth hacker.
Yeah.
Probably. and I use hacker as an endearing term because I'm going to see a guy Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Jeb Brooker.
Okay.
He's preaching at a men's breakfast and Jeb's a hacker. You know, and I love that style of preaching. A lot of people hate it. A lot of people don't like it. And this is going to get down to your discussion below, but
yeah,
you know, there's different strokes for different folks, and he's preaching the word. There is no question about that.
That's right.
He just does it differently.
That's right. And we should accept that. And, you know, one of the things that I thought about in context of this, we had a discussion in our Sunday school class this past week that I thought it seems like it's tedious and doesn't mean anything, but I think it was really important because of the broader aspects and reasons why we had the discussion. And that is that we were talking about, I've been very impressed with our church. We lost our pastor.
Yeah.
Our church, everybody's really rallied around, kept everything going, and it's been really good. And it's been inspiring to watch. But we're at that point now where people are getting tired, mm-hmm. and it's hard to keep up that pace of things. And you can feel people getting a little bit discouraged in different corners. And this is the point where the devil gets in there and starts attacking.
Absolutely.
He's not going to attack while everybody's high and strong and have their armor on. He's going to attack when we get weak. And we're getting to that point now where we're starting to get weak. One of the things that came up, this is another really small thing. We have a pulpit that we used to have in our church. So it's a nice piece of woodwork. It's a beautiful thing. But the last preacher we had, we took it out. He wanted to preach behind something that was smaller and mm-hmm. wasn't, you know. Anyway, that was his preference. Mm-hmm. So we took it out. And I honestly like it better that way. But we have some other people who want the old pulpit back. Mm-hmm. And so it was asked, do we want to bring that old pulpit back? And we're going to bring it back. But my point to our Sunday school class was this. Whether you think it's a good idea or not a good idea, just accept that it's coming back and it's just the way it is. And it's a decision that was made by people who have the best interest of the church at heart. And our interim preacher, he likes the idea of it being back. And so there's every reason to embrace it, whether you like the idea or you don't like the idea. But what happens in churches very often is that we get an issue as small as this and we let it divide us, mm-hmm. and people get worked up about it, mm-hmm. and there's no reason to get worked up about something like this, but we see it all the time, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, let's stick with Billy Graham for just a second, because this is a story that I've told many times. I think I've told it on here, but I'll do it again. I'll never forget. You probably heard us talk about David Hendricks. Mm-hmm. on here, and that he used to work with Run for God. He was the first guy that ever said, Mitchell, this is going to go far beyond you, and he was right. But I'll never forget, David Hendricks was the choir director mm-hmm. at my home church, Grove Level Baptist Church. And David said two things that very profound that really stuck with me through the years on this issue. He said, first thing he said is, you know, he was in a Taco Bell drive-thru line one time. And he said, the guy in front of me was blaring country music. And he said, the guy behind me was blaring hip-hop rap. Mm-hmm. And this was the time in our church's history where we're starting to make that transition, like so many churches did. And that's a good thing. Let me say that from the outset. where we were going from choir to praise and worship. David was a choir director. Mm. David didn't know how to play an instrument. I mean, he could play the piano and your more traditional instruments, but put a guitar or drums in front of him, he had no clue. And he said, and this was during all this transition time, he said, Mitchell, I was sitting there trying to figure out, how do I reach both of those people? Because music is such a big thing now. And he said, I can't do what needs to be done. And for that reason, David stepped aside in our church. And boy, wow. it just rippled through our church. And everybody started pointing fingers and saying, you're the reason. There was Team David and there was Team, you know,
yeah,
contemporary Christian. And David was like, there shouldn't be teams here.
Yeah.
We need to. And it brought up a story, and I'm going a little long here, that I'll never forget, because when I was asked my thoughts on this issue back then, I was a deacon then, it brought up I was camping one time and I was watching Billy Graham from the 50s on TV. Mm. And if you've ever seen a Billy Graham crusade from the 50s and the camera pans the crowd, number one, it's in black and white, but two, everybody in that audience had on a three-piece suit if you were a man. And every woman had a dress down to her ankles and up to her neck.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. And Billy Graham was doing what he did best, which was preaching the cross.
Yep.
Nothing else.
That's right.
Fast forward. I'll never forget watching that and thinking, wow. Because what I thought is, you fast forward now and you go to let's say, Will Graham crusade, mm-hmm. which is Billy Graham's grandson. Incredible orator. But if you look at a Will Graham crusade, people in shorts, t-shirts, Lecrae's hopping around on stage, or Toby Mac, or who, I mean, it is a drastically different thing. But if you close your eyes, and the cool thing about Will Graham is he sounds just like Billy Graham.
Yeah.
When you close your eyes, the message is exactly the same. And yep. that is what is important to your story and everything we're talking about, is we get hung up on the methods.
Yep.
And the methods should change. I am five-part gospel all the way. I yep. love old gospel music, Kingdom Heirs, Gold City, Inspirations. That's my wheelhouse. That's what, if Mitchell was doing the music every week in church, that's what I would be playing. But it's not about me.
Yep.
The method can and should change with the times, so long as the message doesn't. Now, when the message starts to change, that's where we as a church need to rise up.
Yeah.
But when the methods start to change, we need to embrace that.
Amen.
And I know that is not a popular thing to say in some circles, but it's the truth.
Yep.
We should evolve with the methods of reaching people. Paul said, I'm all things to all people. That was the method changing of his day. Wherever he went, he related to people first and then shared the gospel with them.
Yeah.
I'll get off my soapbox there.
No, that's great stuff, and it's true. And again, the point is that in the context of this story, we're talking about history changing. It's going to go in a positive direction when the message stays consistent and goes where it's supposed to go.
Because that's what people are yearning for, right?
That's right.
They're looking for something that doesn't change. And with their life changing so much, we've got to go to where they're at. This isn't discounting the church. The church is and will always be where we need to gather as believers. But I'm saying, if you're not doing stuff outside the church, you're missing three quarters of it. You're missing the point. We've got to go out. We've got to meet people where they are. Now, does this say you need to go witness in bars? And I'm not going down that road. But I'm saying we need to go meet people where they are and tell them about Jesus. And that looks different for almost everybody.
That's right.
Some people, it's going to be the hip-hop area. Some people, it's going to be the country area. Some people, it's going to be the running area.
Yep.
We can share Jesus. Our mission field is wherever we're at.
That's right.
And we've got to understand that.
That's right.
Sorry, Dean.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. And this week, you know what? It's just natural. The studies have shown us that our bodies are meant to run long distances. If you ever read the book Born to Run, you know that our bodies were actually designed that way. And so we are supposed to run long distances. We can outrun almost every animal on the planet as far as distance goes. And that's why we're made. And so I don't think there's a study out there that tells us that we should be throwing a ball through a hoop or, you know, kicking a ball over, you know, into a goal or name the sport. You know, I don't think there's any studies out there saying we were made to do that, but we are made to run. Mm-hmm. So there you go. It's not quite up there with breathing as far as the way we're made.
It's pretty close,
really close.
Yeah.
Well, we had a World Marathon Major this past weekend in Tokyo, as we mentioned with the earlier post. And there was apparently there was a college kid in this thing who went out super hard and was leading this thing. And of course, he wound up dropping out. But you had to wonder.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
I love that guy. And every once in a while you'll see that guy. It's like, I'm getting on TV.
Well, this guy did it for longer than that. I think he thought he had a chance to run that fast. And what had happened was he had two guys that were on his team, his college team, who had run 206 marathons. Mm. And so he went out a little bit harder and thought, I'm going to beat those guys.
I love that spirit, though.
Yeah, I do,
too. You never know. You never know.
I do, too. I think it's great. A couple of Ethiopians swept it. But I sure would like to see a cross-country team, together with those two his two teammates that both ran 206, then this guy, who obviously had the talent to run that fast and probably would have had he not gone out so fast. I'd like to see them get a cross-country team together to race in the NCAA championships. That'd be fun to watch. And then at home, we had the U.S. Half Marathon Championships, and they were swept by a pair of Oklahoma State Cowboys, and the race was in Atlanta. Taylor Rowe and Alex Mayer, they're both athletes from Puma Elite. Man, it looks like Puma has really, you know, a few years ago, you didn't think about Puma at all when you thought about running.
Right.
And all of a sudden, over the past 6 or 7 years, they've acquired some really good
athletes. They're kind of doing it in several sports now. You're seeing Puma in golf now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, not long ago, it seemed like all the good track and cross country and road athletes, they were all either Nike or Adidas. Mm-hmm. It was you were either one or the other. And now, between Puma and On and so many others, a lot of these New Balance, there's a lot of them that are really being competitive. And it's a lot more, I think it's more fun to watch that way.
Yeah.
For sure. And then, of course, we had the conference championships for indoor track. You know, we talked about how indoor track last week. We talked about how indoor track is just not as popular as outdoor track is, and it's not. But something happened this weekend that was kind of sad and really hit home for me as a coach. The HEPS championship. HEPS championship is the Ivy League championship. And if you don't know why they call it the HEPS championship. It's because HEPS stands for heptagonal. At one time, there were 7 Ivy League schools, and so it's a heptagonal meet, and so that's why it's called the HEPS Championship. Of course, there are 8 schools there now, as they, you know, Brown joined the league in 1949, but they still call it HEPS.
Oct Championships.
Yeah. It's still called the HEPS Championship. So, anyway, the HEPS Championship is really important at the Ivy League. At the Ivy League, some of these other conferences may not pay that much attention to the conference championship, but in Ivy League, they do. It's really important to them. Well, what happened, and it's really unclear exactly what happened, but Harvard had a women's 800-meter runner who was pretty dominant in the conference, and she was going to win the 800. They forgot to enter her in the race. They lost by 8 points. And, of course, if she would have won, and we don't know if she would have, but she probably would have, that would have been 10 points. They would have won the conference championship. Nobody knows whose fault it is. I mean, Alex Gibby is a really famous distance coach, but he's not the head coach. He would be in charge of her, but not necessarily. So we don't know. We don't know who's who it happened to. But this, you know, something like this happened to me one time. And so I could really feel this in the pit of my stomach. I don't think I've ever told this story on here before, but I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I had an athlete who...
You've told it before.
Have I? Yeah. It was the first time we had an athlete that qualified for nationals. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know what to do to get her entered. And she actually qualified in the marathon and not regular track event. And so I wasn't real sure. We were clear on what to do. Honestly, had I read all the instructions, I would have seen it. It was very clear in the instructions. But the instruction manual is like 60 pages long. And, you know, anyway, I did
that.
It was my fault. Yeah. I got a phone call from the NAIA saying, just let you know you didn't get your athlete entered. Just wanted to make sure you didn't think you had her entered. And that was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. And my heart sunk. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I entered in it's not called a variance.
Like a review.
Yeah. I wanted to get some kind of, you know, the idea that I was a fairly new coach. This was the first time we had ever qualified. It was the marathon, not a track event. I thought all of that might allow me to go ahead and put her in there. But the year before, this had become a big deal. And they had put something in place the year before. And what they put in place was you could enter an athlete late into the track meet, but it was going to cost $1,500 for each incident that you did that. And so I went to the athletic director and I said, you know, I messed up. I can't believe I didn't realize this is what I was supposed to do, but I can't do anything. This is what they're telling me. It's going to be $1,500. He's like, school can't afford that. You know, and he's like, you know, you just have to tell her. I said, I can't tell her that. He said, well, you know, that's what we're going to have to do. We don't have any choice. And he's, everybody makes mistakes, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm like, I'm not telling her that. So it cost me, he allowed me, which I appreciated. He allowed me to go ahead and pay for it myself. And, but that was an expensive lesson.
Yeah.
And this idea but I understand why they have the rules in place too.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you know, you go and you start doing the work of putting people in events and heats and all that stuff. And then one person comes out and says, oh, I forgot. Let me put this person in there.
It's the whole black and white thing.
And it messes everything up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get it. But man, I can't imagine the Harvard people. I mean, this is a conference championship that happened that they lost because somebody forgot to check a box.
Peace comes through clarity.
Yeah.
I mean, it is black and white. You know, we're hearing right now about the stock market's just going bananas, and it's because of uncertainty.
That's
you
right.
always hear that, and
yeah,
certainty, clarity, black and white. I mean, it's kind of a theme.
Yeah,
through this,
it has been. Well, how about a trivia question for this week? So, you know, we talked about indoor track in the Winter Olympics. Why isn't indoor track in the Winter Olympics? Mm. Well, turns out there is a very specific reason why it is not in the Winter Olympics.
Really?
So did you
go digging for this, or did it just pop up?
No, I dug for this because I was really interested.
Yeah.
And I found out there's a very specific reason. So if you can tell us the reason why track and field, there's a rule that makes it why it's not there. Tell us what that is. Be the first person to get that to me at dean@upward.org, and you will win $20 off in the store. So why do we not, the main reason, I mean, one of the reasons could be they don't want to have it in there, but there is a reason why they can't have it in there.
I'm curious now.
Yeah, check that out. Our motivational thought of the week comes from somebody, I can't pronounce their last name, Tunde Oyeneyin. But I like what he or she said.
Onion.
Yeah. The pain you feel today will show itself as strength tomorrow.
It's a great quote.
I like that for sure. There's a lot of satisfaction in that too. Mm-hmm. This happens to me all the time when I'm out there running. Like I was running on the track this week and I was thinking, man, this hurts. This is really hard to keep this up. And I kept thinking, but it's going to make me better. It's mm-hmm. going to make me stronger. It's going to produce the results I want. And it makes a difference. So, well, that's it for this time around. This is 5 years completed of podcasts. We are so thankful for all of you out there who listen to us, especially those of you who listen every week. Man, we are so thankful for you guys.
And Dean, let me say thank you to you. I mean, a lot of people don't know they hear you and I talking, but you're the brains behind this thing. You're the one that does all the work behind the scenes, putting these outlines together, all the engine. You're a self-taught sound engineer. If you don't believe that, just go back and listen to the first 5 episodes. You've come a long way in this, and the sound of our podcast, I would put it up against any other podcast. So kudos to you. Thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being my partner.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
It's fun.
So here's to another 5 or 10 or 20 years.
We're going to talk about all the advancements in technology 20 years from today.
That's right.
How about that?
That's right. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.